Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Kelly Leonard joins us frequently, not as often as I'd like. It's always a pleasure to have the Vice President, Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at Second City in our show. He also hosts the Getting to Yes and podcast. You can find more of his stuff at secondcity.com or click on WGNradio.com. Hi, Kelly Leonard. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you doing?
Good. I was talking to you off the air. Could you talk to me on the air for just a minute about the book that we both just read, Daniel Devissay's book about the Blues Brothers, the friendship between John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, and all that that begat? And I didn't notice in the credits to the book, he thanks you.
When Daniel was working on the book, he writes a lot about Second City because really that's where, you know, John and Dan found each other. But he really goes into the history of Second City and improvisation in America because it's so germane to not just the Blues Brothers, but comedy, you know, as it evolved at Saturday Night Live and into the future. And we had Dan on the podcast. And I made discoveries. I've worked at Second City for 35 years, and I made discoveries of things I didn't know.
What did you find in the book? I read the book. We interviewed him, and I thought he was just thoroughly entertaining. What did you discover that you didn't know?
No one talks about John Belushi being a drag to work with at Second City.
Why do you say that?
Well,
in what way?
I think it's mythologized, right? I mean, this is someone, of course, who is there well before I was. But the mythology doesn't bring up the fact that he would upstage his fellow actors, and people like the late Joe Flaherty, who just passed away, was annoyed by this. So that when, you know, National Lampoon came calling, they were more than happy to give him the stage to get hired by that group and then, of course, go on to Saturday Night Live. And the other thing that I think we were talking about is just people don't understand the enormity of their success. That didn't happen then. There was no entity that had the highest-rated TV show, the most successful movie, the most successful album, the most successful concert tour, all at the same time. And we're talking a short period, right? This is like a 4 or 5 year period.
Yeah, right, right. It did make me want to go back and watch the first season.
Sure.
And see the first Conehead sketch, the first B sketch, the first Samurai sketch, the Bassomatic sketch. If that doesn't ring a bell for you, maybe you're too old, but if you were watching TV late at night in the late 70s, those were touchstone moments.
Oh, this was the rule of thumb was when I was out on Saturday night, I just had to be home after Saturday Night Live.
And now I think we still care about SNL, but we watch the clips the next morning.
That's right.
I don't know that it's must-see TV as a live television event, and yet they described how there would be a Hollywood A-list or a party, people who, you know, they're not going to turn on the TV on a Saturday night at 10:30, but in this one scene, these famous people all go, shh, Saturday Night Live is on, Belushi's coming on.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. The other thing that just kind of struck me, Kelly, was the drug use. That's what I thought people would object to, and clearly that was a problem for John, but it was so rampant in the Second City and Saturday Night Live families that using drugs was not the exception, it was the rule.
Right, and they actually built a club, which is right behind where Corcoran's Bar is right now across from Second City. It was the Earl of Old Town then, the club.
Here in Chicago.
Yep. Yeah. And they built their own bar, Blues Bar, I think it was called. And it was a private club, but that was a place where, I mean, there's stories in the book of like cocaine use and just rampant drug use. And I mean, that was the times, but then also it became, of course, a cautionary tale. So I know by the time I came to Second City and you know, witnessed Chris Farley dying, I mean, that was a real turning point. That was a time where, you know, the cast that came after, that was not something that they were interested in part because they saw what it could do to you.
You don't think it's a big part of that scene now?
No. No, it's absolutely not.
Let's talk a little bit about, by the way, the book we're talking about is by Daniel Devissay, V-I-S-E, and it's called Blues Brothers. So I guess I could search out that on your podcast.
Yeah, we had him on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I would love to talk to him more about that. But let's you and I talk about somebody else you visited with, and that's Mike Norton, who has a book called The Ritual Effect. What is this about?
So Mike's a pal, And he was in town. And so I said, why don't you come over when we record the podcast at Second City? We didn't do it in front of an audience. We were just in a room face to face. And that was great. I don't often listen to my podcast, to be honest with you, after I tape them. I did listen to this one because I felt the conversation felt extraordinary to me. And I feel the book is extraordinary. He talks about rituals and habits and how they're different and how important rituals are. And one of the stories that he talks with, John, do you remember the huge week-long riot that happened in New York City in September of 1922?
No.
Okay, so there was this week-long riot in September of 1922, this New York City. It was 8 days of rioting that resulted in dozens of injuries and arrests. And the cause was men continuing to wear straw hats after the traditional September 15th cutoff date when men were supposed to switch to the seasonally correct felt or silk hats.
There's got to be more to it than that.
No. Gangs of teenagers prowled the streets, wielding large sticks, some of them with nails driven through the top, looking for pedestrians wearing straw hats and beating those who wouldn't remove said straw hats.
Wow.
So I was trying to think that beatings didn't occur, but I did think of an absurd modern version of this, which is the reaction to professional athletes kneeling during the national anthem. People took sides. People were outraged by this. They were breaking a ritual that was important in some regard.
Yeah, although I would regard the latter story as more fundamental or important than the aesthetic of a straw hat.
Sure. I think the point in the book, of course, is that ritual violations happen all the time. And some of them can be ridiculous, like, and he did find the most ridiculous one that he could find. But it happens all the time at home and at work and in culture. And the thing is that I have a funny story about this from our own Second City. We have time to cover it here.
I do.
We were designing this exercise for the exercise Thank You Because, which we've talked about on the podcast before. And the idea there is, how do you speak through difference? A good way is to thank someone for the opinion, even though you disagree with it, and find something, anything, that you might agree with or support in what they offered. And we were trying to figure out, we need low stakes things for people to argue about. And so we had things like dogs versus cats, Coke versus Pepsi, chunky versus smooth peanut butter. And someone brought up the idea of, oh, here's a low stakes category, whether you hang the toilet paper roll over or under in the bathroom. John Williams, people have very strong opinions about that.
I'm 100% over.
I'm over too. I bring this up and I'm like, that is for some reason not low stakes to people.
Okay, but I'm not going to hit anybody with a stick over that.
You're not.
You're describing for us what? Either rituals that people engage in or common threads that people live by?
Yeah, let's talk about the difference between a ritual and a habit. A habit is it's something we do. It's the what. A ritual is not just the action, but the particular way we enact it, the how. Rituals are important. So before a Second City cast goes on stage, before any show, each actor taps the other actor on the back and says, I've got your back. We've been doing this since the theater started. That's a ritual, and that's sending a signal. And by the way, if one person doesn't do that or won't do it to someone, that's a very important violation to understand.
You know what it sounds to me like is stepping on the Blackhawk logo in the locker room
Yes.
of the Blackhawks. I did that, and people looked at me, and they were angry. I had no idea that was a violation of some protocol, and I felt really bad. I mean, the darts that were shot at me
Right.
were incredible. Talk about low stakes things to argue about, but boy, I felt like I had messed up.
It meant, let's see, it's in the theater world, you call it the Scottish play. You don't say, and I'm not even going to say it here.
There's something you shouldn't say. Oh, the break.
It starts with an MC, famous Shakespeare play.
Okay, I know the play.
Yeah, the theater people do not say that word.
I'm new to this.
Yeah, in a theater, I guess I could say Macbeth here. In a theater, you do not say that. That is bad luck. You say the Scottish play.
Okay, so what are you telling me about all of this stuff?
That habits are good. habits are I do a thing because I know I want to be healthy. So I set out my sneakers the night before and my workout clothes. And that is to make a habit of working out in the morning. Now, there are rituals associated with my morning routine that make it maybe a little more thoughtful and intentional and important to me in terms of the way I do set that up. I bring my coffee upstairs. I put on a podcast. I get myself in a space. There's a little bit of meditation in that. So I ritualize it, and that gives it more meaning. So habits are really just sort of like the things we do, the shortcuts to the way we live. But rituals are how we imbue our life with more meaning and more purpose.
And is that a good thing, rituals?
It's a really good thing. Mike and I talked about our favorite pizza places. And he has a place in Boston that he goes to. I forget the name of it. But his grandparents went there and his parents went there. And John, like when we moved from Boston to Chicago, the first person to welcome us was Lou Malnati. So in the Lincolnwood restaurant, I go there with my son Nick often, and I sit near the table where we all sat because it was all six boys and my parents. And it's like there's a ritual aspect of going there and sharing that kind of food that is beyond whether the pizza is good, and the pizza is good. But it's that those are meaningful and they'll be memories forever.
And are you saying that the violation of these rituals, like the straw hats or these other things, that's what's upsetting to us?
The violation of the ritual is upsetting to us, but it's also understanding of like why you do rituals. So one of the things he talks about is in baseball, hitters do all those rituals, right? Nomar Garcia Parra would like, I mean, it was like an hour that he seemed to, you know, do all the things, taking off the gloves or whatever.
Chuck Knobloch too.
Yeah. Why do you think that they don't do that in the field?
I don't know.
Fielding is easy. Hitting is hard. So you're probably only going to hit that ball 30% of the time if you're really, really, really good. And in the field, you only make errors maybe 2, 3, 4% of the time. So what we do is we tend to attach rituals also to things that are more important or harder.
And if somebody then, even if it's ridiculous, like the straw hats or some of these other things, if they upset that ritual, be it justified or not, that's why it gets such a strong reaction.
Yeah. So to bring up, we talked about kneeling. It's like that is really important to people. So understanding that that's important, but also maybe understanding that it's important to the person who's kneeling. Like, can we understand what the break of the ritual is?
Well, we need to pause here, but I mean, the most recent example of that, of course, is the LSU women's basketball team not being on the floor for the national anthem in their game against Iowa. So Iowa was there, but the LSU women were in the locker room getting ready for the game. It's not their habit to be on the floor.
Right.
But when America discovered that, it hit the fan. People were very upset about that. I'm not sure exactly how that relates to what you're talking about right now, but I think we have in mind this ritual that it's important to America, to many Americans, that you stand, you put your hand over your heart, and you respect the flag and everything that that represents. And if you're not there for that consciously, wow, is that a big deal. Yeah. As my friend Steve Bertrand said, you people didn't even know that this was their habit to not be on the floor. But wow, are you going out of your way now to be upset about something you don't have to be upset about? But we were doing that. I'm talking too much here, Kelly. Does this make any sense, what I'm saying?
It's 1,000% what we're talking about. That's you. So understand that it's important to you. It might not be important to them. And why is that not okay?
Yeah. Well, that was the point I was trying to make, but that wasn't getting much traction when you talk about patriotism. Kelly Leonard is in our studio, the vice president over at Second City. He hosts a podcast that you can get to anywhere you get podcasts, including WGNradio.com. It's called Getting to Yes And. He's been telling us about the book The Ritual Effect, written by a friend of his named Mike Norton. And if you just joined us, the umbrella speech for that is we have rituals different than habits because rituals are imbued with more meaning. And what about them, Kelly? We need to respect them. We need to put them in our lives.
We definitely need to put them in our lives. We need to understand them. He's got a great chapter on the advent of morning clothes.
Morning clothes.
Yeah, when you're in grief. A lot of that happened during the Civil War because this country had never experienced that much death. And what it was it wasn't just like you wore black for a week. There was actually a series of colors that led up to a year. And normally it was sort of like how close you were to the person meant how long you stayed in those morning clothes. So if it was a fifth cousin removed, it might be a week. But if it was a child or a spouse, it was a year.
And I could see how that would validate that life or maybe give you a slow sense of closure.
Yeah.
You don't just slam the door shut.
That's right. And we talked about the way you recognize the ones you've lost, and we do that. I mean, around Christmas, we've got these little rituals we'll do, or around Nora's birthday, we'll go to, like, Margie's Candies and get a sundae.
Oh, really?
And that's it. And it was like, it was sort of that decision for us of, like, we don't want to do a big thing, but we need to acknowledge it in some way to just give it the meaning and the importance that is there.
That's nice, Kelly. You're talking about your late daughter. But then... I'm wondering, do I have rituals in my life? I'm thinking, I don't know.
Well, you've got to have rituals in your life.
Maybe I do. What would an example
be? Okay, so Mike brings up this. Do you brush your teeth before you shower or after you shower?
I would brush them after.
So when Mike asked people this in his keynotes, and he does this all the time, it's 50-50. So there are people who are morally outraged by our position.
Well, you know what producer Pete said during the commercial break?
What?
He came in and said, John, you can tell people to stop texting in about the toilet paper goes over or under now. And in fact, I'll just read you one text from a listener. Under the TP roll, because the tissue unrolls with less resistance that way. My ex-husband and I disagreed about this. You almost think this broke the marriage.
No, that broke the marriage. That absolutely broke the marriage. And this, the brushing the teeth thing, because I'm an after guy too, and he's sort of like, people will be like, how can you, it's so gross that you would not have a minty fresh mouth when you go into a shower.
Well, I don't want to be brushing my teeth when I'm dirty. I like the idea of coming out clean, and now I'm ready to do my oral hygiene.
So what would you think you would feel if you reversed that tomorrow?
It would be onerous to me.
It would throw you, wouldn't it?
It really would.
Yeah. So that's probably a habit, but there might be elements of it.
I know, but I want something that, you know, your example of the morning clothes or something that a family does and knows and it fills them when you go to Malnati's. And I suppose if I thought long enough about it, I would think about that. I know that Thanksgiving is a very important holiday to my immediate family.
And yeah, so what do you do?
There's a movie that we always watch, a concert film. And that is very much a part of our dance.
Uh-huh.
If I don't have that next Thanksgiving, I will be sad.
Yeah.
Is that a ritual?
That's totally a ritual.
Yeah.
I mean, is there like a stuffing thing? Is there like a specific kind?
It's not so much about the menu. It's about the community that we all have and that concert movie playing in the background.
Yeah. So my parents used to hold an open house on Christmas Eve. And there would be basically all the kids could invite their friends and then they would have folks come in. And there was always a big spread that my mom would put out and plenty of booze and just it was like wonderful. And after my parents passed, we decided to host that, but just for the immediate family. But now people are sort of dispersed and the immediate family has other family they're dealing with. And so this last Christmas Eve, we opened it up to everyone. And it was, I got to be honest with you, like it gave me chills just even now about how great it felt to be able to welcome people in and repeat that thing that my parents gave me. I can only hope that Nick, our son, at some point in 25, 30 years decides to do that. Yeah. And it means more than having a party.
Well, it's funny because before we cooked Thanksgiving at home and put on the last waltz and listened to the band and all of that jazz, we had a tradition of going to the big blockbuster movie and then eating out at a restaurant for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when we transitioned to cooking at home and putting a movie on in our house, because we now had a granddaughter and it just seemed to make more sense, that was a big shift in my emotional setting. And I was hoping that it would go well, and it has. But I'm telling you, it was more than just a dinner and a movie. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, and I think if you explore it, I bet you have rituals when you come to work.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, or elements of our lives. But we have to end this conversation, Kelly. Is one takeaway then identify rituals in your life, value them, think about them. Or find ritual in your life because that gives your life more meaning?
Yeah, I think it's as simple as understanding these things aren't necessarily simple. So yeah, locate the rituals in your life, but don't be afraid to add them.
And maybe respect somebody else's ritual.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I go, well, what are you talking about? You're having a turkey in a movie. Shut up. I'm going to change the channel. No, this is important to me.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you have to follow their ritual, but at least you should respect that the ritual is important to them.
Kelly Leonard talks about this with Mike Norton in a book called The Ritual Effect. That is in the podcast where they talk about the book. And you can find his podcast, Getting to Yes, and wherever you find podcasts, including WGNRadio.com. Nice to see you, Kelly.
Nice to see you.